And welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast, titled Five Ways to Secure a Real-Time Distributed System Without Compromising Performance. My name is John McHale, Editorial Director with Military Embedded Systems Magazine, and the moderator for today's event. Today's speaker is Dr. Heidi Schubert, Director of Research at RTI. Her responsibilities include leadership of the research team, innovating new technologies to solve customers' problems, and transitioning research outcomes to RTI commercial products. Her research areas of interest include data distribution in safety-critical systems, security for publish-subscribe middleware, and systems with both safety and security concerns. Her technical expertise is in distributed systems, software development, dynamic modeling, algorithms, and control systems. Today's eCast will consume about 35 minutes, leaving the remaining time for the question and answer session. Before we get going, I want to point out some important buttons on your screen. First, please take note of the Enlarge Slides button. By clicking on this button, you'll be able to view the slides in full screen mode. The second button is the Forward to a Friend button, which enables you to send an email or request for this event. And lastly, you'll find on your console window a button that allows you to enter questions in real time. We'll do our best to address these questions during the closing Q&A session. If you have a question pertaining to the eCast operation itself, one of our technicians will respond back to you during the eCast. Please note that as much as we'd like to, we may not get to all of your questions today. In that case, someone may get back to you after the eCast with more information. This eCast will be posted online today, and an audio podcast will be available as well. And now it gives me great pleasure to turn it over to Dr. Heidi Schubert. Dr. Schubert?
Hi, everyone. Thanks, John. Welcome to the webinar this morning. As John said, my name is Heidi Schubert, and I'm the Director of Research at RTI. Our research team right now is investigating a lot of innovative technologies for real-time distributed systems. And one of our current research focus areas is on how do we secure these real-time systems. So to start out today's webinar, I'd first like to define what I mean when I say a real-time system. So I define a real-time system as any system that relies on receiving data and completing computation tasks in a specified time frame. So this time frame can be less than a second, or in some cases even sub-millisecond. These systems are often cyber-physical systems where computers are controlling the physical devices, for example, a ship or a windmill. These real-time cyber-physical systems are prevalent in multiple industries, including industrial control, energy, transportation, aerospace and defense, medical electronics, and air traffic control. In addition, some non-physical systems have similar real-time constraints, such as high-speed financial trading systems. These real-time systems have several really important characteristics. One is that they generate and consume a lot of data. Typically, this data is streaming from real-time sensors, and the accurate and timely receipt of this data is really critical to the operation of these systems. If there's a software failure on one of these systems, it can really be catastrophic, leading to a loss of property or, in some cases, even a loss of life. Unfortunately, these real-time systems are also increasingly under the threat of a cyber attack. I think one of the biggest threats is also, unfortunately, one of the easiest for an attacker to accomplish for the systems, and that's a disruption or a denial of service. So, for example, a power system, you know, doing this can result in a blackout. For a transportation or a medical device, it can really result in a catastrophic failure. For a military system, it can result in a mission failure. Another threat is that the intruder can access confidential information. For commercial systems, this can result in a loss of proprietary information. For a military system, the result can be even more severe. Finally, there is a threat of a very sophisticated adversary actually taking control of an asset. The problem is that these systems are often very vulnerable. Typically, they were designed to overcome really significant performance and reliability challenges. Often, it was assumed that security just wasn't an issue, either because they thought the attacker would not have enough knowledge of the system, or maybe the system was protected by a physically secure network. However, these assumptions are really starting to break down as more and more of these systems use open protocols that anybody can really be familiar with. You know, additionally, interconnectivity between systems is really increasing, especially interconnectivity between these systems and a traditional IT system. The other problem is the operators of these systems are vulnerabilities of the system themselves, although often they're unaware of this. They can, for example, inadvertently install malware when they're installing a patch. Also, the operators are usually trained to deal with natural disasters or system or part failures, but they aren't trained to deal with cyber attacks. So right now, there is a lot of knowledge and technology that's available to protect IT systems from cyber attacks. On the right, I have our typical information security triad for data: integrity, availability, and confidentiality. So integrity means that the data is not modified by an unauthorized entity. Confidentiality means the data can only be accessed by authorized entities. And availability means the data is available to entities that need it. It's achieving all three of these characteristics that's really the challenge. For example, you could achieve data integrity and confidentiality by taking some data, carving it into a rock, and locking it up into a guarded safe deposit box. Of course, this doesn't meet the availability requirement. The availability requirement really includes a timeliness piece to it. You need to get to the data, you know, at the time you need it. And this timeliness of data availability is really what's critical in a real-time system. Because of these tight time constraints in your real-time system, it's often not possible to take the authentication and encryption techniques that are currently used today in IT systems and directly apply them to real-time systems. So the question is, what can you do in a real-time system? So today I'm going to go over five things that you can do to secure data in real-time distributed systems. So the first method is not to secure the data within a local area network that's specific to the real-time system, but instead to secure data that is flowing in and out of the local area network. The second one is to secure a UDP transport rather than a TCP transport. This can result in lower latency data delivery. The third way is to really select which data you need to apply encryption and integrity to. The fourth way is to incorporate secure operating systems for the platform, for the applications that are sending and receiving data. And the final way is to add in some cybersecurity monitoring. So before I go into each of these methods, I want to first talk in general about communicating in a real-time system and specifically about how you do that with RTI DDS middleware. Then I'm going to discuss these five ways really in the context of securing the DDS middleware. However, even though I'm going to use DDS as the context, all of these ways could be really applied to any real-time system, regardless of the middleware that's being used. So real-time systems need a scalable, high-performance communication infrastructure. RTI Connects DDS provides this by creating what we call a software data bus. And the goal of the data bus is really to be plug and play so that you can add new nodes anytime and come into the framework and can send and receive data. And the goal is to really have high performance and a plug and play architecture. To optimize the performance, the middleware is designed for scalability, reliability, and low latency. The key to the real-time performance is a peer-to-peer architecture. So the data is pushed directly to one or more peers that want it. The data is strongly typed and set in an efficient and compact format called CDR, as opposed to a very verbose format such as XML. To achieve this efficient peer-to-peer architecture, DDS has a process called discovery at startup time, where the middleware discovers other nodes in the network and what data they are going to publish and what data they need. And then based on this discovery, DDS at runtime sends data directly to matching peers. So RTI's real-time middleware was designed for performance, availability, and scalability. A key goal of our middleware is to deliver consistent low latency, even when the system is under load. We do this through the peer-to-peer architecture, so the data goes directly from the sender to the receiver. And by designing the middleware to do minimal computation within the data path, the middleware also pushes the data out as soon as it is available rather than having the subscriber ask for new updates. So all of these things really minimize latency. The peer-to-peer architecture also increases the availability of data as there is no single point of failure. If one or more of the peers leaves the network, all the other peers keep operating just as before. The middleware can accommodate multiple publishers of the same data and can start delivering from a secondary publisher if the primary one stops sending data. So that's another way that you can achieve very high availability with the solution. RTI's DDS middleware is very scalable. For example, the same data can be sent to multiple subscribers through multicast with very similar performance to sending one. So as you scale up, the performance scales. Also, the publishing side can filter to send data only to interested subscribers. So all of these capabilities really focus on the availability side of the information security triad. So the challenge is really how can we also add the other security we need, the confidentiality and integrity, without compromising the real-time performance and the availability that is currently provided by the real-time middleware. So in general, how do you ensure confidentiality and integrity of data as it is being transferred between nodes? So the first step is that each side really needs to authenticate their identity with each other. This is really needed to prevent an intruder to create software that can pretend that they are a valid application on the network. So authentication can be done with a signed certificate verifying the application's identity. Next, the applications need to securely exchange cryptographic keys. Then once each side has the keys, the sender can use one key to encrypt the data and another key to calculate a hash on the data. Then when the receiver gets the data, they use their key to decrypt the data and also calculate the hash and compare it to the hash by the sender, and that way they can authenticate that the data that they received has not been modified in transit. So as you see from the picture, the concept here is that this really creates a secure pipe between the applications. So you know as your data is traveling between these applications, it's going to stay secure, and it can't be modified, and it can't be viewed by anybody that doesn't have access. So there's been a lot of research and development of the best way to do this. And the R&D is both in the cryptographic protocols of how do you encrypt the data and how do you calculate a hash securely such that you can't break that, you know, without knowledge of the key. And also on the protocols themselves for establishing the certificates and exchanging the keys securely. So a well-established protocol for the authentication, key exchange, and cryptography is transport layer security, or usually referred to as TLS. When you access a secure web page, such as if you're logging onto your bank account, you see the HTTPS. Behind that, it's using TLS. TLS is an IETF standard, and it's actually based on an earlier protocol called SSL with some improvements to it to make it even more secure. So TLS is a very well-proven security protocol. There's also an open-source solution of TLS called OpenSSL that's very widely used in IT systems. So as I mentioned, in the web browsing, it's also often used in IM, voice over IP. And it's primarily used over TCP. So how does TLS work? It really works to create that secure pipe between applications. And it starts with a handshake protocol. So first, each side will exchange information such as the version of TLS they're using, the cryptographic algorithms it's using, and some of their settings. Then based on this, each of the applications will exchange certificates and verify the other application's certificate. Then they will securely exchange session keys. The way they do this is one of them will use their public key, will use the public key of the other application to encrypt the session key, send it over, and the other application can decrypt it with its private key. So then once this handshake protocol is over, and each side has really agreed on session keys for encryption and integrity authentication, then all the data will go through what's called this TLS record protocol. And this will encrypt each data item that goes through and add a message authentication code. So if you notice that what happens is that really the authentication of the application and the key exchange takes place initially, and then after that the TLS is just adding the encryption and the message authentication code. So the question is, is it feasible to use TLS as the underlying transport mechanism for a real-time system? So a problem is that the TLS protocol is really based on top of TCP. And TCP is a great solution, and it's been very highly tuned for many IT applications. TCP provides reliable data transfer, flow control, congestion control, and it works very well. It's great for managing lots and lots of network traffic in a diverse network with different computers on that network. However, it's often not your best choice in a real-time system. For critical data in a real-time system, latency is really, really important. And I mentioned at the beginning, we're talking latency that can be measured in microseconds here. So unlike your web browser where you like to see a response in a second or two, real-time systems, a second or two, can make the difference between the system continuing to operate or crashing in a bad way. It's often really important not just to have low latency, but to really have reduced latency jitter. You want to know that your latency is going to stay within certain bounds. So to achieve this, often TCP is really not your best choice. You often want to use a simpler protocol such as UDP that is going to be very lightweight and is not going to have much jitter to it. It's just going to send the packets. And often for sensor data that's streaming multiple times a second, if you have a protocol that doesn't have reliability, that's okay, because if the packet is lost, you just want to get the next one that's coming along anyway. And then for data that in your real-time system that must be sent reliably, a reliability protocol such as the one that's provided by DDS middleware is often a better choice than the TCP protocol. The reliability protocol in DDS is designed to have a lot less of the latency jitter. So I would posit, I don't think it's really a solution for a lot of the real-time systems to just say, okay, let's pull out our communication and we need to secure it. Let's pull out what we've got and replace it with TLS and TCP. So what can you do for a security solution? So as I go over some of these secure solutions, I'm going to break it up into really different use cases, because I think the first thing, you know, we definitely want to achieve the integrity and confidentiality and availability, but you really got to think about, you know, what is it that you really need to secure in your system. So the first use case I'm going to talk about is where you have a system that's a real-time cyber-physical system that really has its own local area network for the distributed real-time data traffic. And within this local area network, it's really a well-protected network. The nodes are controlled. There's not a lot of access in and out of it. And, you know, this is often the case for military systems that they said, okay, this is going to be a really critical system. We're just going to make sure that, you know, partly for reliability reasons, but also for security reasons, that it's isolated. However, what happens is at some point you say, wait, you know, I really need to connect to this local area network. You know, maybe there's, you know, two different local area networks you want to connect. Let's say you have, you know, two local area networks on an unmanned aircraft, and one of those aircraft has a much better weather sensor on it, and you say, well, I want to get the data from that weather sensor, you know, onto this other unmanned aircraft that's going to be flying with it. So you want to be able to do that, but at that point, you know, you're now opening up a connection between these that could be open to a cyber attack. So the question is, you know, let's assume we've got these two, you know, physically isolated systems, and we want to create a pipe in between them. You know, how can we do that securely? So this is really the first method I'm going to talk about in how you can secure real-time systems. So for this method, we really are going to only add security for data that is going in between the systems. So in this picture, shows two different real-time systems, and, you know, think of each of the small blue rectangles is a node, you know, within the real-time system. So within the system, the nodes exchange data with each other in real time, you know, with no added security. But then any data that's going to go in between the system goes through a software component called the routing service. And we have a product called routing service that can do just this. So on the real-time side of the routing service, it has an adapter so that it sends and receives data using the real-time protocol. So, for example, using DDS over UDP. Then when you want to pass the data between the systems on the other side of the routing service, it can use a TLS and TCP to create a secure data pipe in between the systems. So what will happen is that the data that goes between the systems is going to have a higher latency than the real-time data that's being exchanged within each system. So typically this is going to be okay because you're really designing your system to have the real-time characteristics within the system, and you're not likely going to be depending on a critical real-time data from another system in, you know, for example, in your tight control loop. So also, I want to mention that, you know, it's going to have higher latency, but TLS and TCP is still quite high performance. It's just not as high performant as something that's going to be tuned for, you know, really low, you know, sub-millisecond kinds of latency. So another use case for the secure channel is when you have these real-time systems and they need to pass data in between each other and between a firewall. So this is often a case when you've got real-time systems that are, you know, located within an enterprise behind firewalls. So an example of this is if you're connecting to real-time financial trading systems in different geographical sites. They often will have this architecture. So the firewall can be really used to add, you know, additional, it's going to add quite a bit of additional latency, but it really can add additional protection to make sure that there's, you know, no malware thing is getting through the system. The other thing is that a lot of times the IT policies there'll be a security policy that says you cannot send UDP through a firewall or through our system, and they'll say only TCP can be used. So in that case, you really do need to use something like TLS over TCP to connect your two real-time systems. So another use case is when you have your real-time system and you want to create access for a client across, say, a wide area network to get access into that real-time system. So, for example, let's say you have a medical device in a hospital and it's got some problem and you want the vendor to be able to log in remotely and look in and be able to debug the behavior of that device. So in that case, what you want to do is provide a way for a remote application to, you know, to see some data and log in to your real-time system. And one method that IT professionals will sometimes use to secure internal LANs is to really allow TCP connectivity to only be initiated in one direction. In this case, it really uses the client-server protocol in the TCP to have the client request information from the server. In this case, you can use the TLS over TCP connection to create a secure connection into your real-time system through a firewall that, say, only allows connections within one direction. So I think that using the TLS solution can be a great solution for really connecting the real-time systems together or creating a path into your real-time system. But what about if you really do need to secure some data in your real-time system? This can really be necessary when your real-time system is sharing a local area network with other systems, or maybe it has a wireless component to it. For example, a real-time distributed system on board a ship may share a network that's also being used for other networking services on that ship. So in these systems, there's, you know, potentially some holes for an attack into your real-time system. So you really need an approach to secure the real-time data. So I would argue what we really need here is a way to secure the UDP transport. So fortunately, there is a solution, although the TLS protocol is typically run over TCP. There's another version that's called DTLS, or Datagram TLS, that runs over UDP. So DTLS provides the same identical standard authentication and encryption algorithms just as TLS has. Just like TLS, it uses a certificate that is assigned by a certificate authority to establish authentication. Then data that's sent over UDP can be encrypted and a message authentication code added to it. This solution can provide confidentiality and integrity for data that is sent over UDP. And because it's based on the very well-known and well-tested TLS protocol, it's really using provenly secure protocols. And it's the open source OpenSSL supports this, the DTLS. The only caveat with this is that it's still, because it's based on the TLS protocol, it's still a one-to-one protocol. So it only supports unicast over UDP and does not support the multicast data delivery. So the DTLS is supported over over DDS. In fact, DDS can use either TLS or DTLS as a transport. So if using DTLS, what happens first between two peers in a DDS network is the DTLS protocol handshake will happen before any DDS traffic is sent. Then the first DDS traffic that is sent is discovery traffic. In DDS, the discovery protocol is used to find other peers in the network, exchange information about between the peers, such as the data that each peer will publish or subscribe. The information at discovery time can really include a detailed description of the data type of the data that's being exchanged. And this is used by DDS to determine which data should be sent to each application. So if DTLS is used, this discovery traffic is sent securely. It's going to be encrypted and ensure that it cannot be modified. So then when the application data is sent, labeled as user data in this diagram, it is also encrypted and has the integrity hash. So essentially all the DDS data in this is running over the secure DTLS transport. So essentially it's creating, between all the DDS peers in the network, it's creating a secure data pipe. So we were curious if this is really going to achieve the performance. So we ran a test, and there's actually a small typo here. It's 1,024 byte packets or 1 kilobyte packet that we sent on this test. And so what we do for our latency test is we set up two machines and we publish packets rather quickly from one to the other, and then we actually send them back, measure the round-trip latency, and divide by two to get an idea of what our one-to-one best effort latency is. So in this example, you can see that the average latency does increase quite a bit once you add a secure transport, which is exactly what we would expect, because each data packet that's being sent, the entire DDS packet is going to be encrypted, and then there's going to be an algorithm that calculates a hash, and then the other side it will calculate the hash, compare it, and decrypt it. So, you know, as we expect that it's going to, you know, increase the average latency quite a bit. But what's interesting is, you know, definitely for this use case, you can see that the DTLS has quite a bit better performance than the TLS. So for a real-time application that's set up for the streaming, DTLS can be a much better choice. Note that for IT systems, you know, when you're running over the WAN, that TLS and TCP have a lot of good characteristics that can often give better performance in that case, which is why, you know, the TCP is a much more common protocol for IT systems, but in your real-time system, where you've set up your whole network to minimize latency of the critical data path, the DTLS is a much better choice. However, as you can see, it is really going to increase your latency, and you know, the question is, what can you do if even that increase in latency, you know, is unacceptable? You know, at that point, do you have to give up on security, or are there other things that you can do? So this brings us to our third method, which I'm calling selective encryption. So there are really two different use cases of when you might want to use selective encryption. The first is when some of the data needs to be secured in the system, but not all of it. For example, consider a medical device where you need to secure any data that's related to the patient treatment, but the status data of the medical device itself doesn't need to be secured. The second use case is when the discovery data or metadata should be secured, but not the real-time streaming data. Securing just the discovery data can make it harder for an unauthorized node to join in the network. It can also make it harder for somebody unauthorized to understand the real-time data, as then an intruder would not get the information about the actual data type. So So how can you do selective encryption in DDS? So RTI Connects DDS has what we call a pluggable transport framework. So that means with a pluggable transport framework, DDS traffic can be sent over any transport by just programming in an interface to it to the DDS middleware. So default transports with DDS are UDP, IP, and shared memory. DDS also supports both a DTLS transport and the TLS transport. So within a single application using DDS, it can send data over multiple transports. For example, a publisher could send data to applications running on the same computer over shared memory and to applications on other computers over UDP. So for selective encryption, we can use this framework to separate traffic and choose which transport the traffic is sent over. So one use case for selective encryption is to encrypt the discovery traffic only. While this won't really prevent an attacker from sniffing and seeing the actual data, it can provide some protection in your system. So if the discovery traffic is protected, then that means that when a node is looking for other peers in the network, it's only going to find other peers that are authorized. So it does give you an authorization, an authentication of peers piece. Also, the metadata that describes the data types would also be protected and couldn't be seen by an intruder. So the intruder could sniff and see the data that's being passed through, but won't necessarily be able to figure out what it means. So the next use case is to really try to configure DDS to only selectively encrypt some types of data. So the way DDS works is, as you can see here, there's writers and readers of the data. And so there'll be a writer and reader assigned to different what we call topics of data. And so for the example I gave earlier where you'd say, well, some of the data, you know, really needs to be secure in the system. It's, you know, critical confidential data that we don't want anyone to have access to. You can choose a DTLS transport for that data and then have some of the other data not be secured in your system. So some of the data that's in red would not be secured, the data in green would be secured. This way you could use, you know, if there's some data that's very time critical but is less, doesn't have the confidentiality requirements on it, you can run that over just over raw UDP and get the high performance out of it, and then data in your system that you do have some security constraints with, you can run over DTLS, and you'll take a small latency hit, but you'll only take the latency hit on that data, not all of the data in your real-time system. So all the previous discussions, the first three ways, were really talking about creating a secure pipe for data transfer. So the next two approaches are other approaches you can take. So an additional security approach you can take for a real-time system is to provide a secure operating system. So often real-time systems are, you know, running on embedded platforms where you're not going to have a lot of things like a virus checker running. So one of the goal of a secure operating system is really to provide, it doesn't provide the secure pipe between applications, but it provides a secure platform for running your application. So I'm going to talk about two different ways. One is SE Linux, and one is a separation kernel. So SE Linux is specific distribution of Linux. Instead, it's really a set of added security capabilities to Linux. So in particular, SE Linux really provides a separation between specifying security policies for the platform and enforcing those security policies. So using SE Linux, your security architect can enforce mandatory access control on processes to really confine those processes to a minimum security level. So this can be used to prevent an attack on a user-space application from getting access to the kernel and really taking over your whole operating system. SE Linux also provides security on other objects, such as files and ports. So if you're using SE Linux for a DDS application, you can actually use specifically the SE Linux type enforcement to restrict access to ports. So SE Linux can give you some support of your application's access control of your applications running on the application on the operating system. You can also use it to set up some security policies for the DDS data distribution itself. So within DDS, it really maps connecting to a set of peers, which we call a domain. So think of a domain as a set of peers. And it maps those domains to actual ports. So what you can do in SE Linux is you can restrict some access to the processes to opening certain ports. So that really within your system will, if you have the mandatory access control, you only allow applications that are running DDS access to the DDS ports. It can help really restrict access to only applications that have been authorized, you know, within the SE Linux platform to communicate over the DDS ports. You can also, if you want to, you can use it to set up a configuration where you restrict the access of specific data. So data samples in DDS are defined by topics. You can match a topic to specific ports and use this to set up your data cloud, your DDS data cloud, to give restricted access. So another option for providing additional security is to run DDS within a MIL separation kernel. So the MIL separation kernel was really designed actually to run applications at different security levels, and within the guest OSs within the kernel, the MIL separation kernel guarantees separation in time and space and really isolates faults between these partitions. And it also really it provides a pre-configured data flow in between the partitions. So that means that if there's, for instance, a malware attack on one of the operating systems within it can't leak out and affect any of the other guest operating systems. And because these MIL separation kernels, they really were built with the idea of running applications at different classification security levels, the separation kernels have been highly evaluated to really prove that they provide separation. So if you use DDS, within one of these systems, you have some very strong isolation between the systems. And our RTI Connect DDS supports VxWorks MILs right now, and so you can really set up a system with isolation and separate the different applications. So finally, I'd like to talk about monitoring the computers and networks for actual cyber attacks. So the goal of the monitoring is really to be able to detect an attack as it's happening and try to isolate it and prevent it from spreading. So there's a lot of different monitoring techniques that are used. So active monitoring is typically used in a lot of IT systems. This can be intrusion prevention systems that are run either on the network or on the host. So, for example, you know, on your host, you might have a virus scanner that checks everything that comes in for viruses. On the network, you might have, say, on an email server, a virus scanner that's checking that email. So I think within a real-time system, some of these active monitoring things, you know, can be used on, you know, on host systems that, say, are not deeply embedded or are not in your real-time data path. In fact, it's a good idea to put these on hosts that are that may be attached into your real-time system. However, a lot of these active monitoring systems, you know, you don't want to put in to any of your real-time critical data path. For example, an intrusion prevention system that, you know, is looking at all the data that passes through and starts blocking some of it, you know, you really may not want to do that within your real-time system because that's going to add latency to every data sample that goes through it, you know, especially something that's, a stateful intrusion prevention system. So what I think should really be looked at is passive monitoring for real-time systems. So on the device itself, and again, this is going to really depend on how deeply embedded the device is, how much of this you can put on there, you can look at application-based protocols, intrusion detection systems that, you know, quietly monitor the behavior of the application and make sure it looks the same. As it's operating, that it's following the typical behavior. You can also look at host-based IDSs, things like a tripwire where, so for example, tripwire just looks at some of the files on the host occasionally and make sure that certain files that aren't allowed to be changed, make sure they haven't been modified or have only been modified in ways that are allowed. The other thing I would suggest is adding passive monitoring on the network. So what this can be is a device that instead of sitting in the critical path of the data, instead just sniffs the data as it goes by. And, you know, this can either be a network-based intrusion detection system or an anomaly detection system that's going to look for problems and then not actually, you know, take any preventative action on its own, but would notify the operator that it sees a problem. So in conclusion, I'm going to say that, you know, I don't think you should really blindly just start applying IT security technologies on your real-time system. You know, instead, I think you should selectively use these and one of the five approaches that I went over, either creating a secure channel between your systems, securing the UDP transport, selectively encrypting which things you want to encrypt, basing your applications on secure platforms, and adding in passive monitoring. So that's really the conclusion of the webinar. I did want to put up this slide showing some additional resources. One is a way to try out RTI Connect messaging. There's also some links to our website, and we have additional information on our security on our website, as well as additional webinars. So I'm going to hand it back to you, John.
Thanks, Heidi. Thank you for the presentation. That was well done. Now we'll get right to our questions from the audience. We still have about 10 to 12 minutes to answer questions, so keep them coming in. First question is, you discussed two different secure transports, TLS and DTLS. Which is the best choice for the real-time system?
So I think that, you know, I would say typically DTLS is because it's got a lot lower latency. I think you would want to use TLS anytime you need to go over a WAN, for example, or run through firewalls, or any time where there's actually already TCP being used and you want to secure that TCP channel.
Okay. Does DTLS follow the connectionless paradigm of UDP? Can it be used for one-to-many data delivery?
So DTLS actually, it's connection, it's handshake protocol that it uses at the beginning, really follows the client-server type protocol that TLS uses. So that means it can only do one-to-one data delivery. So it does not support, even though UDP itself supports multicast, once you use DTLS, it supports only unicast.
Thank you. Next question. How can we quantify security? How can you measure additional security or some security? This questioner gives an example of how much TLS plus firewall is stronger than just TLS.
I think that one of the challenges with quantifying security is you really actually have to start first with what you think your threats and vulnerabilities are. So, adding TLS and the firewall, the TLS is going to, give you some of the integrity and confidentiality, but there's other vulnerabilities that it can't prevent that the firewall can prevent. So you really, I think, need to start with your threats and vulnerabilities, and then from there decide what security you need.
Thank you. Next question. Is there a difference between SOA and DDS, and which one is more secure to implement?
There is a lot of difference between SOA and DDS. In fact, one of the things we like to say is that the DDS can be used to really create a real-time SOA. So, typically in itself, SOA is not as much focused on real-time, but focused on creating, an architecture of services. And I actually think that both SOA and DDS have a lot of challenges in terms of security. I think that SOA actually has a lot of research right now on how to secure it, because you really want to have a lot of access to services. So I would say right now they're probably similar in terms of security, and that out of the box neither one provides security itself. So you have to go and look at it and add security. So in SOA you might add that by adding TLS in or other security policies. And similarly with DDS, you need to go in and add security policies on top of it.
Okay. Thank you. Next question from the audience. I need to have reliable data transfer. Can I still use DTLS?
Yes. So if you just use DTLS over UDP, it's not going to give you reliable data transfer. But if you're using DDS, DDS actually has a well-tuned reliability protocol that can provide reliable data transfer. So if you use DDS over DTLS, you get both the security and the real-time data transfer.
Okay. Can you give an example of, just from my own quantification, of a new DDS system, new DDS technology being used in a newer military program that you can talk about without getting in trouble?
So DDS is being used in quite a few different military programs. So one of the newer one is a network operating center for tracking assets. So the network operations center was being used by the Army as a Blue Force tracker to track friendly assets. And so the way the network operation center was being used prior to DDS was a lot of servers within the system, and they were having a lot of problems with scalability of the system. So they replaced the infrastructure within the network operation center with DDS, and we're seeing a lot of improvements in the performance of that.
Here's another question. What operating systems are required? Will it work under ThreatX, for example?
So DDS actually supports a lot of different operating systems. Unfortunately, DTLS itself has a less wide support. So DTLS, I don't think that DTLS is currently supported under ThreadX, but I'd have to check if OpenSSL actually supports that.
Okay. I have one last question from the audience here, and then we will wrap it up. How can we evaluate and understand the performance factors of DDS, and what level of QoS should we expect?
So in terms of quality of service of DDS, DDS actually provides a pretty wide variety of quality of service, including reliable data transfer, fault tolerance capabilities, and deadline. So in terms of the quality of service, I actually suggest you go to some of the resources I listed there, and you can see some white papers and some additional information about DDS. There's also some information about performance of DDS. So as I mentioned, the DDS is really designed for high throughput, low latency, and low latency under load when there is a lot of throughput. And it's also designed for scalability, and we've done a lot of tuning of our discovery protocol to enable a large system. So again, I'd point you to the website, and if you need more information, you can follow up with me after the webinar. I'll get you more detailed information on performance.
Thank you, Heidi. Well, that brings us right up to our time limit for today. I'd like to thank Dr. Schubert for speaking today. This eCast will be posted online today, and note that an audio-only podcast version also will be available. Thank you all for attending. I look forward to seeing you on future Open Systems Media webcasts. Goodbye.